Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We've got the Senior Bowl practice on in here, so I'm sure Floyd's eyes will be glued to the left tackles that are...
It's not just the Senior Bowl. It's Reese's Senior Bowl. Have
it's
you
your
not
bowl?
Noticed that?
It's yours?
Of course. You want to go down? I can get you in this game for free.
Because it's your game? Can you give me some Reese's for free?
No. But I can get you in the game.
I would like some free Reese's. I'd like, you know, get fat eating candy, even though I just bought an elliptical to put in my house. I was watching the Preds game yesterday on my elliptical, just trying to add extra cardio into the day.
Mike Mayock is...
GM of the Raiders.
He's got to be in shock. He's usually up in the booth. Now he's down on the field having to work.
Mike Mayock. What a disaster. Okay, I promised to the phones on the two things. One, the two complaints. One, the officiating in the Saints game. And two, the overtime rule. Do you have a thought? And again, the overtime rule take is, if you got a problem with the overtime rule, you are a crybaby. End of story. Do you have a thought, or do you want to go right to the phones?
Let's go to the phones.
Phones, as always. Let's go to Keegan, who's going to kick us off. Go ahead. What's up, Keegan?
Yeah, longtime Saints fan here, originally from Baton Rouge, now living in Nashville. I just want to say I agree with the GM to a degree. It's a slippery slope if we allow pass interference calls to be reviewed by challenge of the coach. But why didn't New York get involved? That's my biggest question after that game, is if we can't see a rule change to where we're allowed to challenge these personal fouls, which in a perfect world I would like to see, especially at the end of the 2 minutes, like you said, why can't New York say, hey, guys, you on the field, you missed it? And furthermore, when they do miss big calls like this that cause championships to go in potentially a completely other team's hands, why is it that they receive no reprimand at all? They're not fired. They're not even suspended from maybe playoffs in the future. They just kind of say, sorry. I believe it was Roby that said, it is what it is, and something more should be done than that. And I'll sit back and listen from there.
Well, I mean, it's not Roby Coleman's job to chastise the refs who gave him to get them from screwing up the NFC title game.
I mean, I think I would agree with you. I mean, New York is in contact with all those officials. So if New York wanted to, they could have done something, said something, made a move to save the bacon, but they didn't do it. And I really have no reason. I don't know what it would be. But I think, you know, the only repercussions that you see on this whole thing is going to be with the officials. I mean, that's, I think, where this whole thing lies. And if they were to both get fired, wouldn't shock me in the slightest.
How can you be an all-star ref the whole season, then make one bad call and get fired for it in the playoffs?
Did you see the call?
I mean,
that was beyond a bad call.
What is that like? If you're a Pro Bowl kicker and you miss the game-winning Super Bowl kick and you got to go?
There are bad calls. Cody Parkey. There are bad calls, and then there are what? that would fit in there. So, I mean, for them to get fired, I mean, like I said, wouldn't surprise me at all. And I don't even know who they were.
I have two thoughts on that.
I didn't even pay attention.
I actually read an article about that. I've never heard of either guy. The two guys that didn't make the call. I have two thoughts on that. Number one, I think New York does get overly involved in some of these games. There were two plays during the Patriots game where I think New York chose the easy way out. The first was the Edelman fumble, non-fumble punt return play, which deep down inside, I was glad, maybe because I was rooting for the Patriots, but I was glad that they called no fumble. But one of the angles did look like it hit his thumb. And if the call on the field was a fumble, it should have stayed a fumble. But I think New York said to themselves, if we're wrong on this, it's easier to be wrong in saying that it's not a fumble, because the Patriots will have the ball deep in their territory as opposed to saying it is a fumble and Kansas City will have the ball close to scoring distance. And so I think the league looked at it and said, you know what? The safer call is to say no fumble, even though there was not, I mean, you can't argue that there was conclusive evidence that Edelman fumbled that ball. There was no, I mean, there were so many different angles and different things.
Well,
and
yeah,
you
but
tell
every time,
and,
there were only, in my opinion, there were only three things could have happened. It could have hit one of his thumbs, and it could have hit his forearm. And when you saw all those other angles, it was so explicit that it wasn't, did it hit his thumb? It was, oh, geez, I mean, it missed his thumb by 6 inches. I mean, it wasn't even close. And I think that one was pretty easy. It took him some time to get through it, you know, to find all the angles get all the shots.
I agree with you that I don't think he touched it, but I'm not sure I saw an angle that told me it didn't hit his thumb by 6 inches.
Oh, if you look at it again, if you look at the one that was front,
right,
it looked like it hit one, if not both, of his thumbs, and then. But if you looked at it, I can't remember what the angle was from other angles. Like I said, I mean, I was shocked, and I told my wife, we were sitting there, and I go, "That's got to be some kind of optical illusion." I said, because you can look at one, and there is no doubt in your mind that at least there's a good chance it hits him, and then you look at this other angle, and it's a mile away. I mean, I have no clue how that happened, but was shocked by it.
By the way, what was Edelman doing? What the hell was he doing trying to field that ball?
Oh, he's trying to prevent it from rolling farther.
Let it roll, Adoree.
Yeah.
Let the ball roll. I will take it at the one as opposed to giving it to them at the 20. Do not touch that ball. The other thing, too, I don't know if you noticed this, in the game-tying drive for Kansas City. So they get it with 40 seconds and a timeout, and Kansas City's going down to kick a field goal. The Patriots were offsides on a big throw where they caught it with 16 seconds. And remember, because Romo got super giddy, that he thought that the Patriots are going to have to run up and clock it, and they didn't. I mean, the Chiefs were going to have to run up and clock it, and they didn't because of the offsides. Cleet Blakeman was so worried about screwing up the clock there that he went to the alternate ref to ask him. The alternate ref had the mic to New York on to ask them about, was the clock right? Because he was so worried about screwing it up. So I get where New York comes into play on some of this. Let's go to Chris, who's up next on the pass interference no call. What's up, Chris?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
You know, obviously everybody knows that they blew that call at the end of regulation. But in overtime, the Breeze interception, Michael Thomas was clearly interfered with. And I think that the only reason the refs didn't throw a pass interference on that one is because they thought the ball was tipped. Clearly it was not tipped. It was just a product of Breeze's arm getting hit. But that should have been pass interference as well. And that's the only example or instance that I can think of where I think pass interference should be reviewable is when they throw the flag. You know, was it a tip ball or not?
So I think if it's reviewable for everything pass interference-wise. Thank you for the call, Chris.
Well, I mean,
I want your take on that, because I thought that was pass interference too, but they said that the receiver ran into the DB, so it's not pass interference.
Yeah, I mean, if the DB's station, it's like, kind of like basketball. I mean, the DB's got a right to his spot on the field. And if he's posted up and you try to run through him and you get knocked down, that's not his fault. That's your fault. So, I mean, I didn't have a problem with that one.
I feel like they should have thrown it, just, you know, makeup call. And maybe because I was rooting for the Saints.
I'm sure they were waiting for a makeup call.
Well, they made one. They threw a pass interference where the guy held him. And I'm like, anything close, the Rams are going to get called for. So I was a little stunned the Rams didn't get called there. Bill is up next on the overtime rule. Thank you for calling. What's up, Bill?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Really enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Yep.
So, I don't really have a problem with the rule, but I just, for the life of me, what would be the big deal if just each team gets a possession? After that, then it'd be sudden death. I think it's intrinsically still football. Would add to the strategy. Do you take the ball first or not? I don't see why. What would be the big problem with that? Thanks, guys. I'll listen off air.
Well, yeah, I mean, what happens if at the end of the there is nobody else scores? I mean, you just played what however long for no reason.
Well, if nobody scores, then it's the same because you keep playing until somebody scores or the clock runs out. So
that's
that,
what I'm saying.
That wouldn't.
That's
that
what
is,
I'm saying.
I mean, you still punt in overtime now, but
yeah. But if I mean, if my point is the way it. Now this is just me. I don't like ties.
I think
ties ought to be eliminated from the game. And if that means you've got to have a kickoff to see who wins, then that's fine. Because you go out there and you play those games.
I think is that Thursday?
Who went and finish it? Nobody wins.
Is that Thursday?
What's the purpose?
I'll look it up. Maybe that and dodgeball are on the same day for you.
Kick-tack-toe. Are you gonna watch kick-tack-toe this year at the Pro Bowl? The skills challenge they have on the Thursday?
That would be no.
You're not going to watch kick-tack-toe?
That would be no.
You watch the Shrine Game practices?
Yes.
And not kick-tack-toe?
Nah.
Or Ultimate Dodgeball? I'm telling you, I watched the skills challenge last year. It was thoroughly entertaining. And my theory is that they should have an off-season kick-tack-toe tournament where they allow gambling. And I bet you people, so like just your kicker performs. So like we'd be watching Ryan Succop compete in kick-tack-toe. And I got to tell you, I love kick-tack-toe. I love it. That would be a great way to keep them from tying. And I have the caller asked what's wrong with the other team getting the ball? Honestly, there is nothing wrong with the other team getting the ball. I just don't think you need to give the other team the ball. Them's the breaks. Deal with it. Right back to the phones next. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Will you at least watch kick-tack-toe? You don't have to watch the whole skills competition. You just watch a little kick-tack-toe.
No.
Graham Gano won last year. Right back to the phones next. It's Jared of the GM on ESPN 1025, the game.
When the New England Patriots line up, they might not have the greatest athletes in the league at every position. But what they do have, they're going to execute.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to route guys where they're supposed to be routed. They're going to tackle well. And they make contact with almost everybody at the line of scrimmage to make sure that the timing of plays is thrown off. And that is coaching. That is teaching guys how to play the game, which I think is why Coach Belichick put such a premium on being smart so that you can understand what you're being taught and so that you can be successful playing the game.
You know why I think Coach Belichick puts a lot of emphasis on being smart, Tom Jackson?
Tom does a nice job, doesn't he?
Oh, I miss him. Him and Boomer on ESPN were great.
That's good.
But do you know why I think Coach Belichick puts such an emphasis on being smart?
Why is that?
Because if you line up offsides in the most important play of the game, it might cost you a trip to the Super Bowl, as D Ford learned. Which, by the way, is it bad that I wanted D Ford, who's going to be a free agent? I wanted D Ford on the Titans, but then after that, I'm not so sure how much I want D Ford.
It's one snap. He admitted to
it. I know, but can that not?
I doubt he'll get out. I mean, no.
Let's go back to your phones. Tyron in Brentwood is up next on the Overtime Rule. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Tyron.
Yeah, a couple of things. On the pass interference, I mean, clearly that has to be called. I mean, that's a situation where really common sense should have took over. The ref should have huddled, even the one that was nowhere near the play. They should have all huddled and really discussed and come to terms, okay, he pretty much clocked him. And I think Sean Payton even said the committee people out of New York told him not only was it pass interference, but it was a defenseless receiver hit. So that has to be called. I mean, we can talk about, you know, that wasn't why they lost, this, that. But that right there, if that's called, they take three knees, they kick a field goal with 5 seconds. New Orleans in the Super Bowl. Me being a Brady fan, I'm happy. I'd much rather play the Rams, so that's fine with me. And on the coin toss, let's just, come on, America, let's stop. All right, let's stop. We all know why this is a problem. Because the New England Patriots won, that's why it's a problem. Had Mahomes won the toss and went down and scored, everything would have been honky-dory. Everything would have been just fine. It was the fact that Brady went down once again and, you know, showed everybody why he's the greatest, and they won the game. That's why it's a problem, you know. Everybody thought going into Sunday the dynasty was dead. It was a passing of the torch. So, America, I got to ask you, how does Brady and Belichick took a taste? I mean, how does it taste? I love the fact that how they won the game, too. It was so beautiful on the road, overtime. Brady went blow for blow with the kid, and I have the utmost respect for Mahomes. And thank God, if Tom's going to play 45, thank God for Mahomes, because he was the only stumbling block to send Buddy Way to, from continuing to go in the Super Bowl. Think about this, Floyd. They went 11-5. They were dissension, and I believe the Wickersham piece. This was a year that was more gettable than ever. And they're in the Super Bowl. Gronk was a shell of himself. Brady played the last month with a partially torn MCL. And they're in the Super Bowl. So going forward, there should just be a rule. As long as Brady and Belichick together, AFC, go home. Go home. Sign on. Just go. I've seen enough. Because you're not going to beat them. But Patrick Mahomes
it,
is
it
the
is
only
crazy.
He's the only one for it. That's it.
Thank you for your call, Tyron. It is kind of crazy to think the last AFC quarterback to represent the league in the Super Bowl that wasn't Brady was Peyton Manning, and he hasn't picked up a ball in 3 years.
Oh, yeah. Hasn't been around.
that's a little crazy to that point. Let's go to Mike, who's up next on the pass interference call. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, I've been listening to y'all, guys. The overtime rule, I've always been good with that. I've got no problem with that because, unlike into the college games, man, those games can go on forever sometimes during the overtime. But enough said on that. But now, as for the New Orleans call, I like to fell out of my chair when I seen that. How could they not call that?
Oh, yeah.
And you can't help but think that somewhere along the line, somebody was paid not to make a call. I hate to say that, but you can't help but think that sometimes. If they can catch guys holding in the line, and they can't call something like that, it's unbelievable. Maybe within the last 2 minutes of the game, they could have a review for that, because in my opinion, that was a game changer. New Orleans would have went to the Super Bowl, I do believe.
Yeah, I think so too, and I appreciate your call.
That happened.
Yeah, no, so go ahead.
I would be good with the 2 minute rule in that, where they could have stuff to review like that. I would be really good with that.
So that's why I think it's going to happen. Thank you for the call, Mike. I think that under 2 minutes, pass interference becomes a reviewable play reviewed by New York. And I think the networks will love it because it allows them to use their guys even more. So that 2 minutes to go, Roethlisberger, big game, throws for Juju Smith-Schuster, and there's no flag, and now it's going to be reviewed by the booth. Gene Steratore, Gene, what happened? You know, they love using those guys, and I love them. I mean, I tell you what. Now I don't even know what happened until Gene tells me what happened. So,
yeah, the hard part again is that you're going to have pass interference called one way the entire game, and now 2 minutes you're going to New York, and somebody else is going to call it a different way.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not fair. You can't do that to the players.
Life ain't fair.
I don't think.
I'm telling you, that's what's going to happen.
No,
I am telling you.
I don't think they may make it completely, you know, say okay. You know, and we'll open it up to everybody. Otherwise, I mean, I don't see anything wrong with the rule. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the rule, and there's nothing wrong with the replay. Like I said, I mean, that strictly is the officials. Now, do we need adjustments there? I think without a doubt.
Let's go to Adam, who's up next on the offsides on D Ford. Go ahead, Adam.
Hey, man, I haven't really heard anybody discussing the camera angle from the offside, but it wasn't directly down the line with the football. You couldn't see the guy encroached with the football. He was a little offset from his players. And so I'm not saying it's not offside. I'm saying historically the game has favored New England in a lot of ways. And I just think that camera angle was bogus. I think we should have got to see a shot right down the line.
Well, the guy who did have the shot right down the line threw the flag. So and plus his helmet was in front of the football.
And I think there is a shot right down the line someplace. Now I agree with you. I didn't see it, but I mean it was, you know what happens. I mean he's lining up on the player, not on the ball. And he said after the game, I got to line up on the ball. Everybody knows that. But what happens is, you know, we're hurrying up, and it's, you know, now it's more important. You got to get to the quarterback. You got to get a sack. It's going to make the difference in the game. And you line up on the guy, and the guy, because it is late, is going to back up a little bit. Now, could it have been an illegal formation or something like that? Maybe it could have. I didn't hear anybody talk about that. But when he backs up, the defender, if he's not looking at the ball, will line up exactly the way he did the last play. And by doing that, he'll end up offside. So it's I mean, it's a mistake that most veteran guys do not make.
I mean, I don't think he would have come out and publicly admitted that he was wrong for where he lined up if he wasn't. And if there was some sort of Zapruder film that we could look at that would tell us where he was, they probably would have shown it to us on CBS, because then they would have immediately, Gene Steratore, Gene, what do we see here?
I mean, and I think you could look at him when he was lined up, even though there wasn't a line down the, a camera down the line. I mean, he was clearly offsides, in my opinion.
Just stupid. Like, just it cost you the Super Bowl.
Sad.
Just stupid.
Just sad.
D is up next here on the show. What's up, D?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I got a take on the overtime rule. We have in multiple sports where they do shootouts and things like that. How about in the NFL, we do a kickoff. The kickers line up. They kick it from the 20. They move back, and they go back and forth until one misses a kick, and that team wins the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think generally speaking, and I don't want to speak for everybody in the league, but I think I could speak for most that you don't want a kicker determining your livelihood if you can keep from it happening. Now, sometimes you can't, and sometimes you got to go out there with them and let them decide your fate, more or less. But I think if you have four or five overtime games during the year, and your kicker is a little bit shaky, or your kicker gets hurt, and now you've got a bunch of backup kickers that you've been through, I mean, it would be awful to get fired over something like that, especially if you had a good enough offense that if you could have gotten the ball, that you would have been able to move the ball down the field and get in a position to score.
Excuses. I'm not sure I like hearing that. Trevor Maddich, ESPN college football analyst, going to join us next. We'll get into some draft stuff with the Titans, as well as the Senior Bowl that's going on. And also, I'd like to hear Trevor's takes on the AFC and NFC title games, because he's got takes. So we'll get to all of that coming up here on Jared and the GM. Hey, do you want to have a premium experience at the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament? Call 615-770-7800 now to secure access to suites, club seats, or the Lexus Lounge at Bridgestone Arena. That's 615-770-7800. Jared and the GM, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Jared and the GM are here. Mike Vrabel and John Robinson are in Birmingham, I would assume, for the Senior Bowl, which was going
Mobile,
my bad. So you were like all in on the Senior Bowl, watching it on TV right there when they were doing the one-on-ones with the corners and the receivers.
Right.
What did you notice? What did you see? What are you looking for? What is the...
You know, I don't know any of them, so I'm looking at everything that's out there.
Well, you need to DVR it and watch it all tonight when you go home, and then give me a breakdown tomorrow on the show.
Yeah, that could happen.
So the Titans, everybody's looking at the Titans, and a lot of people have them picking a defensive lineman or a defensive end or A.J. Brown, the wide receiver at Ole Miss in the first round. I don't know about any of this stuff yet. I'm not ready to sit there and start pulling names out of the hat. Trevor Maddich joins us now, ESPN college football analyst. So, Trevor, when you sit down to watch practice at the Senior Bowl, the Senior Bowl last year, I think, is where both you and Floyd fell in love with Marcus Davenport, who ended up going high in the first round of the Saints. What are you looking for this year when you flip on the Senior Bowl?
Well, the first thing you want to look for is how enthusiastic are they about playing the game of football. The Senior Bowl is the kind of place that exposes you if you don't like practice, because it's a hardcore practice, two-a-day kind of style of week. And there are guys that show up early and work on stuff before practice that stay late a little bit, that have a spring in their step, and there are guys that just sort of mope around, and they're near the end of the pack when they're jogging from one drill to the next. That's one of the first things that I would be looking for, because what you don't want is a high-profile, high-talent diva who loves the trappings of the game but not the grind of the game.
How many guys out there, and I'm not looking for a specific guy, but just when you watch college football this year and then you look at some of the mock drafts and, who's going in the first round, how many guys do you think there are that are going to get discovered this year as kind of a, not a big name right now, but when we get close to the draft, people are going to love them, like Leighton Vander Esch or Marcus Davenport were last year?
Yeah, there's always guys like that, and those guys will emerge. Today's just the first day of practice, so you know I wouldn't want to name a name right now, but I will say this, that it's a big deal for the quarterbacks who are not expected to be first rounders, because there's only three quarterbacks expected to be taken in the first round, at least at this point by most mock drafts. That includes Kyler Murray of Oklahoma, and I think that guys that are down there right now, Daniel Jones of Duke, Drew Locke of Missouri, Jared Stidham of Auburn, those kinds of guys need to really impress teams, because I really think that there will be stars in the NFL at quarterback coming out of the Senior Bowl. And one of those guys that really has kind of opened eyes is Drew Locke. He has been a little bit inconsistent in the way he's played on the field at Missouri over the last couple of years. Sometimes he's lights out. Sometimes, you know, he just missed open receivers. It was inconsistent. Well, this is the kind of scenario where coaches can watch him practice. They can watch his mechanics. They can watch his eyes. They can see if that inconsistency is something that they feel they can pretty easily fix, or if it's a systemic problem that probably won't get a whole lot better in the NFL. But a guy in that category, second through, say, fourth round quarterback, could do himself a lot of good by showing him practice those little things that coaches feel like they can grab a hold of and work with and turn him into a better NFL player than people expect.
Trev, I'm going to guess you played in the Senior Bowl.
I sure did.
Yeah, I thought you did.
As a matter of fact,
I probably scouted you when you were down there playing that.
You may have. I guess I wasn't that good. If you don't remember, I guess I didn't knock anybody's helmet off.
How was that experience for you?
I gotta go back and check that out then, boy. If you don't remember me full well. Well, let me ask you this first, though, Floyd. Is there anybody that did stand out to you that you remember to this day that, wow, that guy was impressive to you in the Senior Bowl when you were there scouting?
Oh yeah, there. I mean, every year, and you remember the Senior Bowl way back when.
Floyd.
The Senior Bowl is tough here. I mean, I think we all realize that. But 15 years ago, I mean, it was a bloodletting. You know, I mean, and if you were a pro coach or a pro personnel guy, for you to go there and because when you watch one-on-one, I mean, it was like you were at camp. I mean, it was right. For real one-on-one, and same thing with receivers and DBs and even 9-on-7.
So you know, you
go in 9-on-7, it was a battle.
So who'd you fall in love with? We need a name.
Oh, I fell in love with a bunch of people. When you go down there, I mean, when Trevor played in it, Trevor, there were probably of the 20 guys drafted in his group, and I have no idea how many there were probably the vast majority of those were first-round guys that were at the Senior Bowl.
You see, he's not going to give us a name, Trev.
Yeah, he doesn't want to make me feel bad. He wants to say, I didn't remember any of them, Trev. You weren't that boring to me. And by the way, back then it was full-on two-a-days. Now, even in the NFL, you can't do full-on, full-pad two-a-days. But it's still, as practices go, it's still full-go hard practice. The thing about the Senior Bowl for me is that it really elevated my draft stock. I was projected to go from the early third round to late first round. And lo and behold, I went to the Senior Bowl and impressed people, especially with my ability to pass block as a center, and I was taken in the late first round. So that really helped. There's one I feel really bad to this day, though, for this one poor guy that I had to practice against in the Senior Bowl. Listen, I kid you not, man. There are things that I wasn't best at, but I could pass block as a center, man. I could lock you out and stone you cold. And so that's one of the things that really impressed people about what I could do, my footwork and my pass protection. But, you know, because guys I blocked for at BYU, Steve Young, you know, Jim McMahon, some people like that.
Yeah.
You know, they appreciated that. Anyway, so there was a late arrival, this defensive lineman from Oregon. And I don't know if he was a replacement or he just couldn't get there at the beginning of practices. But like the second or third day he shows up, he's fresh off the plane. They hold me after practice and they say, look, we want to see this guy in one-on-one pass pro. I'm like, all right. And they picked me for a reason, you know, because this guy would be tested by me. So I just, like, three or four reps, I didn't just beat him where he kind of got to the edge, but I pushed him by the quarterback, so it wasn't really a stop. No, I finished squared up, locked out, and sliding back and forth as he tried to go sideways to sidelines. And I could have stayed there for another 20 seconds, like a, you know, like a cowboy on a Bronco bull kind of trying to, you know, you only have to stay on it for like, what, 8 seconds? Well, I could have been on that thing for 30 or a minute and a half. They finally blew the whistle. And when they called off the drill, that guy was almost in tears. And I walked away feeling really bad because I had to crush this guy's dream. But what I could not do was take off any of my ability against the guy. In other words, I couldn't take it easy on him.
Oh, yeah.
Because then the coaches would look at me and say that I didn't have that finisher's instinct to crush my competition. So I had to crush him. I had to do everything I could to embarrass him. And I walked away thinking it just wasn't fair to that kid to come off the plane, drive to the practice field, show up against me for his first impression for these NFL coaches. I felt bad for him, but I went in the first round, and I don't know his name, so there you go.
who was it? Who was it that impressed you?
I can't remember. He was a kid from Oregon. I can't remember his name, and I'm not saying I'm better than him or whatever, just that wasn't his day. But he was from Oregon. I remember that that green and gold helmet.
Who? Anybody impress you that from the Senior
Bowl? Yeah, Chris Spielman. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, there were some good players over there. You know, I mean, there were some very good players. And, you know, they all wanted to trade me for my helmet. They liked that Y, that BYU Y on my helmet. I'm like, this is my helmet. I wore this helmet in the national championship year. What, you think I want a Bowling Green helmet to put on my shelf now? No. And so, but, yeah, they were like, and what really stood out to me was how they were such good guys. You know, I can't remember a single guy that I thought that guy's a jerk. You know, I just remember a bunch of guys that were like Paul Ott Carruth from Alabama. I'd never heard anybody with the middle name of Ott, much less they say the word Ott when they say his name. Paul Ott Carruth, OTT, I think. Great guy. He's running back. I think running back. Great guy. Just terrific guy. You know, what do I know? I'm going to school in Provo, Utah, and I'm coming out to see Alabama players, Ohio State players, you know. And it was pretty awesome to be around those guys and see that, hey, football players are basically football players.
You didn't have any Billy Bobs at BYU, huh?
Well, no, we didn't have any Billy Bobs or Bubbas. But Alabama had a Paul Ott. So, you know, that rounded out my college career.
What about how do you see these college All-Star games? Like, I think mostly about the East-West game, you know, where they're headed, because – I mean, when I played in the East-West game, I mean, it was gigantic. I mean, a big game. And now they fight to just get time, you know?
Well, now there's a million of them, too. You know, back then, there was the East-West Shrine Game. There was the Senior Bowl. The Hula Bowl.
Yeah.
And but how'd you do when you played in the Shrine Game?
Oh, I hung in. I hung it, and then I went.
I bet you crushed him.
I went to the greatest story.
And tore it off and handed it to him.
I go to the Hula Bowl and played in that one too, and ended up the MVP in the Hula Bowl.
Wow!
Still have the bowl at home. Yes, for a defensive tackle. Now you got to make some hay.
Was that the MVP of the football game or the MVP of the luau the day before?
I was big at the luau too, come to think of it.
So what'd you do in the game for it? I gotta hear this. How'd you earn MVP? What was your
I have no idea.
MVP moment.
I have no. I'll tell you exactly. I'll tell you. I got started. This is how it got started. I was covering the kick, the first kickoff. I go down, and the running back ran right straight at me, and just at the time of contact, he jumped up and tried to spin in the air, and I caught him in the air and flipped it. I mean, it looked like I just ripped him. But truth is, you know, he was up in the air, and I kind of caught his feet and tripped up. Anyway, everybody, ooh, wow. Yeah. It got started from there. That was the end.
You know what, Floyd? It's too bad they didn't have photography back then, or you could have had a poster of that.
Trevor Maddox, ESPN college football analyst, is our guest on the show. We'll get into some of the mock drafts, which direction they have the Titans going, and then I got to get Trevor's opinion on the two complaining issues. One, the Saints, the penalty in that, the complaining there, and the complaining about the overtime rule. We will do that all next with Trevor Maddox, ESPN college football analyst. Jaron the GM are on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Floyd and I were watching on the Senior Bowl the one-on-one matchups, which is Floyd's favorite kind of thing. And each time I'm like, so was that a good pass rush or was that a good block? Or was The one that I feel like I got was the small, tiny little tackle from Boston College. Had a nice little block.
Okay.
But he might be a little too small to play tackle in the NFL. But
we'll have to see.
So the Senior Bowl's going on now. I'm sure there will be some names that come out. I was just thinking about this. Names from the Senior Bowl the last couple of years. Jimmy Garoppolo caught fire at the Senior Bowl. Carson Wentz caught fire at the Senior Bowl. Marcus Davenport caught fire at the Senior Bowl. I mean, a lot of guys kind of get hyped up at the Senior Bowl.
They have a lot of guys get a chance to play against big-time competition that isn't in their conference or, you know, who they've played against. So they've got a chance to kind of light it up for themselves.
So a lot of the mock drafts are out, and we talked last week, Mel Kiper Jr. has the Titans taking T.J. Hockenson, the tight end out of Iowa. A lot of people have like a pass rusher, an edge rusher kind of thing. Brian Burns, Florida State, that's who CBS Sports has him taking. A lot of people have him taking a wide receiver, A.J. Brown. Trevor Maddich, ESPN College Football Analyst, is with us. Trevor, if you were the Titans at 19 and you were looking for a pass rusher, a defensive end kind of guy, or a wide receiver, what do you think you'd be safer at with the 19th pick in the draft? Going wide receiver or going maybe someone to get after the quarterback?
No, I'd go with pass rusher at that point. A wide receiver is going to touch the ball, what, 5-6 times a game? 7 if they go to him a lot. Whereas a pass rusher can affect every time the opposing quarterback drops back to pass. And there's some guys that will be available there. There's a outside linebacker named Ja'Kai Polite from Florida who had a lot of sacks this year. Very productive, very explosive. Brian Burns of Florida State is a different style of body. He's taller than Polite, but he's really good at getting low and bending around the corner. And he's a guy that's pretty raw, but he could develop into an elite NFL pass rusher. And I think Cleveland Farrell, defensive end for Clemson, is another guy who's an elite pass rusher out of the gate. Now, whether he fits their system perfectly, it remains to be seen. But if they will always be able to find a place for a 6'4", 285-pound pass-rushing terror coming off the edge. So I think that I would go with a pass rusher and go with one of those offensive players later. Keep this in mind, that very good to elite pass rushers don't tend to last very long in the draft. But because there are so many outstanding defensive players, especially D linemen in this draft, those guys will be pushed down a little bit farther and become available a little bit later than they normally would have. But that also pushes wide receivers and tight ends down farther to be available later than they would have. So right now I'd go for a steal of a pass rusher before I'd go for a steal of a wide receiver.
Who's the Titans are picking in 19, Trev? How many of those guys do you think will be gone by 19? And I know it's early for you.
Yeah, no, there's a bunch of them that will. I mean, depending on the mock draft, Cleveland Farrell of Clemson is around that spot. Brian Burns of Florida State that we talked about is around that spot. Ja'Kai Polite, same way. But again, what the wild card is what's going to happen at quarterback. Is somebody going to trade up to take that Giants spot, for example?
And they always do.
Yeah, that's right. And that'll push people back down a little bit. And maybe somebody that needs a pass rusher needs a quarterback more. And he'll go up and trade up, and all of a sudden that creates an opportunity there. So the players that I'm mentioning are guys that are supposed to go around that area, give or take about 5 spots, depending on who likes them. But ultimately, you know, I'm not talking about the best of the best. I'm not talking about Nick Bosa of Ohio State. Hey, the Titans should pick him. Well, no, he'll be gone in the first 2 or 3 picks. So these are guys, and also there's an offensive lineman that I'd be looking at if I were at Tennessee. If he shows up that late, I'd grab him. That's Cody Ford of Oklahoma. He's playing tackle for them, but really he's more of a guard, I think, in the NFL. He's a strong guy who's got a nasty attitude. You pair him with Taylor Lewan, holy smokes, the attitude of that offensive line picks up. And one thing that I'm thinking if I am Tennessee is that the interior guard center guard did a really poor job for the most part in keeping pass rushers out of Marcus Mariota's face. And right now it's interior pass rush that is the critical pass rush in the NFL. The reason for that is that there's so much college system coming into the league that balls are coming out more quickly. Edge rushers sometimes don't have time to get there. If you've got guys that can push the middle of the pile like an Aaron Donald of the Rams, then you can get pressure into the quarterback's face even on those shorter passes. Well, Tennessee didn't do a very good job of protecting against those kinds of pass rushers. And I think it'll really help Mariota. Even if they don't go with one of those pass rushers, if they like an offensive lineman at about the same grade in that spot, that'll help this offense more than any other single position, even receiver.
Trevor Maddich with us, ESPN college football analyst.
Is there anybody coming out this year, Trev, that in your mind would compete with the Notre Dame kid that ended up at Indy?
At guard, no. You're talking about Quentin Nelson.
Right.
And at guard right now, I really don't think that there's a guy of that ilk. I mean, that's a perennial all-pro player,
right,
potential Hall of Fame caliber, and I don't see that. I see Cody Ford as a guy that could be a legitimate first-rounder. But there's a couple other guys that they could get that, you know, that are not in that elite category. They can get in the middle of the draft. I mean, two names to look for are Bo Benshall of Wisconsin, who I think is one of the most exciting guards in college football. I think he's really good. I think he'll drop down a bit because he's a guard. But he would be a good addition. Another one, late in the draft possibly, is Nate Herbig from Stanford. He's 6'4". He's lost weight. He started there at about 360. Now he's down to about 335. But, I mean, that dude has potential to be an anchor in the middle, and that's really what they need. So depending on how he runs and how he changes direction in the combine and some other places and test pro days, I think Nate Herbig as a late-round pick for Tennessee is a really interesting prospect.
Trevor Maddich is with us. Trevor, we got to get your take on this. The two things people are complaining about, one, the pass interference call in the Saints game, and two, the overtime rule about how Kansas City didn't get the ball. My take on these, I think that they're going to make pass interference reviewable from the booth under 2 minutes starting next year. Floyd hates that idea. And two, I think people that are upset about the overtime rule are crybabies and need to get over it, and your defense needs to get a stop if you don't win the toss. What do you think of those two issues?
I agree with you on the overtime rule. People say college is better, but the team that wins the toss in college wins the game at a higher rate than the team that wins the toss in the NFL overtime. So actually, from a standpoint of competitive balance, the way the NFL does it is more balanced than the way college does it. From a standpoint of reviewing pass interference, I think you got to really watch out for that stuff. And maybe ruling pass interference isn't the way to do it. Maybe having what college has. College has basically a Mount Olympus rule, a God rule with a little G, that allows the replay booth to make a change on something that materially affects the game in an egregious way that's obvious to everybody that they just missed. You know, for example, there was a punt that ended up, you know, dropping on the 4-yard line and dying there. And the official thought it was in the end zone and he called a touchback. Well, everybody could see it wasn't in the end zone, for goodness sake. But that's the difference between starting the game with the drive on the 4-yard line or out at the 20.
Mm-hmm.
And so they used that rule, even though that wasn't really officially reviewable. So in the case of pass interference, in this case, everybody agrees, right? They would have overturned this if they could have. It was obvious. The problem is when it's not so obvious. See, you can make contact with receivers as a defender with the ball in the air. The question is, are you materially impeding his opportunity to catch? And so they would have to make that rule extremely explicit that it must be obvious, I mean, super clear, and not just a preponderance of the evidence, because otherwise you've got all kinds of little nudges that'll be dissected, and that's a problem. Look at another problem. What if a team scores a touchdown pass, say on the last game, catch and run 80 yards? On the opposite side, what if the offensive player hit the defender in the face on his release? Can you review that too? Well, that wasn't material to the game, but what if on that play, an offensive tackle held a pass rusher that probably would have hit the quarterback before he could throw it? So now it's a game-winning touchdown, walk-off touchdown at the end of the game. Should you be able to throw the flag as the opposing coach and say, hey, that guy held, and see if there's holding on the offensive line? You see, you open up a whole big bucket of worms if you start to be able to review judgment calls. So if you do that, it would have to be super egregious. It would have to be the two players that had the biggest effect on the game, where the ball is and nothing away from it, and then you'll still have people complaining. So I think you've got to be careful. Now, what I think they'll do is make some sort of a change, and like the PAT rule where they moved it back for a longer PAT, I think they'll try it for a year and see if it works, because this was so egregious that it affected the Super Bowl. So, but I think they've got to be very careful and very narrow in their definitions.
Trevor Maddich, ESPN college football analyst. By the way, Ian researched it, Trev. Dale Dorning was the defensive lineman from Oregon who was in the 1985 Senior Bowl.
Oh, Dale Dorning. Okay, I got to look up and see if he made it in the league or not.
You need to call him up and hang out with him.
That is outstanding work right there. And by the way, I do want to see that photo of Floyd annihilating that kickoff returner. Yes. I'm picturing it right now, and I want to see the look on Floyd's face at the moment of contact. It's probably like a saber-toothed tiger sticking his fangs into a mammoth, you know?
Eyes closed, lips clenched.
Trevor Maddich, as always, Trev, we will talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
Trev. We'll see you, Trev. Trevor Maddich, ESPN college football analyst. Okay, Floyd Reese. Coming up next, the Senior Bowl has started today. It is officially draft season. So, what are the draft needs for the Titans? The GM will break that down next. What do the Titans need to get done in the draft? He will break it down for us. That's all coming up next on Jared the GM. It's ESPN 102.5, The Game.